The next case is 06952, Fifth Antonio Inc. versus Gary Baxter, executor. Mr. Wachter.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Mark Wachter, representing the executor, Gary Baxter, of the estate of William Vitantonio. And I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Watch your time there on the clock.
Thank you, sir. The question presented is whether Ohio Revised Code Section 230519, the savings statute, applies to a dismissed action which had been brought on a rejected claim. The case brings, I think, into sharp contrast the statute of limitations on one hand and the savings statute on the other. Some preliminaries, of course, the statute of limitations would be for purposes of finality, of avoiding uncertainty, so that parties who were involved in the estate, or for that matter in any other action, would know that nothing further would happen, that whatever claims were there we're done, we're pending, we're finished. The savings statute, on the other hand, which allows for a claim to be refiled after it has been dismissed, is rather a parachute, so to speak, for litigators. If there's a missing document, if a witness were to become unavailable, some other occurrence like that, this would effectively allow an additional year. So we have this conflict, this stress between these two issues. In this particular case, the timeline of the case brings it, I think, into very clear focus. The decedent passed away in July of 2000. The claim in this case was filed just one day short of the claim period, which at the time was a year, July of 2001, thereby extending this to the maximum time that it could be. The claim was rejected in a timely fashion in August of 2001, and the suit was filed again in the longest period that it could be, just short of 2 months, October of 2001. The case progressed as litigation does, and literally on the courthouse steps was dismissed in June of 2003. And then almost exactly 1 year later was refiled. So the facts, as I said, bring this case really into very clear focus. The virtually longest period of time that could be utilized was utilized. And this is not, I would submit, the speed that is contemplated in a probate action or in a probate process, particularly with respect to claims. It's important, I think, for the court to note that in Ohio Revised Code Section 211706, we find that claims must be filed not with relationship to when the probate process starts, but with relationship to the date of death. 6 months from the date of death, whether or not an estate has been opened, a claim is to be filed. And the language contained in 211706 is instructive as well. It says that the claim must be filed with the fiduciary or be forever barred. And I'll refer to that language again because I think it's critical to the understanding of how this is to be applied.
Is that language different than what was in the Allen versus McBride case? As you know, I dissented in that case, and the legislature's now said that the savings statute does not apply. But I don't recall the forever be barred language in the will contest matters as it is in this one.
Precisely, Your Honor.
Would that give us an additional basis on which to distinguish Allen, despite the legislature making the change, as a different legal standard that would apply or require the savings statute not be applied?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I will argue both that forever barred language appears not only in the claim presentation, but also once the claim is rejected and the two-month clock starts to run, that same language, forever barred, appears again. So that there is a distinction between the will contest, where we have the language, where the language forever barred doesn't appear, and the claims, where it appears both in presentation of the claim initially, that it must be presented or be forever barred, and again in the filing of a separate action in order to try to support that claim, which was filed in this case, or be forever barred. And I think that that's an important distinction, and even if the legislature had not ruled or had not passed the statute that it did with respect to the saving statute and will contest, that that would be a valid distinction, that, that language does appear in both places.
Mr. Wachter, I understand that the statutory scheme seems to shorten the time for filing claims to promote the efficient administration of probate estates. But in this case, the estate was still open. So what prejudice would have inured, or does that make a difference, or should it make a difference in our analysis of interpreting these statutes?
It does, and it's an issue I think that was raised during the oral argument of Allen versus McBride as well. This action, the action to enforce the claim, takes place in the Common Pleas Court, while over across the street in the probate court, that is still going on. And so it wraps around this action. And what happens is we have a group of people, so to speak, waiting in the wings. We have heirs, we have surviving spouse, we have taxing authorities who are anxious to see what happens in this claim. And while it is true that nothing happened in this case, or in the probate case, during that intervening period of time, it's with good reason, because a claim which was filed, as in this matter, for $1.5 million would change the entire distributive scheme in the estate. If distributions had been made, they would have to be unwound. Tax calculations would have to be redone, so that nothing happened, but again, with good reason. It wasn't a question of prejudice. I think it was a question of prudence, of waiting to see the outcome of this case.
So the filing of the case delayed the probate administration and prevented that process from continuing.
Certainly.
But the probate case could have gone forward, and they could have closed everything out and could have closed out the estate, and then if we accept his interpretation, the plaintiff could have refiled? If we accept his interpretation?
Yes, the statutes do allow that, but it also puts a burden back, so to speak, on those who receive during that open period of time to give back to the estate, so that a surviving spouse, a claimant, a taxing authority, presumably, and one who receives a distribution would perhaps get their distribution. The estate would be closed, and yet they'd still be hanging fire, so to speak, waiting to find out if they were going to have to give it back after this extended period of time. It seems that everything about the probate process is set for speed, is set for a quick determination of we have a decedent, there's a certain amount of property to be disposed of in a certain fashion, and except for claims, everything else should move along very promptly. But here, instead of having a two-month period to file and then some trial period to determine that claim, it's now been extended by an additional year.
Well, if you have a will contest, that can drag on for a good long while, can't it?
It can, Aaron.
So there are other things. Complex valuations. Problems that can drag things out.
There are any number of occurrences in litigation, of course, which can drag things out. But what we're trying to do
with the feds over estate tax.
Certainly, and any of these could extend the process.
And
of
all
estate.
Of those impinge upon the folks who are going to inherit their ability to. Get the bounty in a timely and quick fashion.
Certainly. But what we're dealing with here is a saving statute that is primarily to assist the litigator, the civil litigant who, for one reason or another, hasn't been able to have the case ready to go to trial. And so we're going to take the rights of those folks who are awaiting distribution and say, well, the case wasn't ready to go to trial, so we're going to wait another year. It's another year, and there are all sorts, as you mentioned.
Counsel, anybody, well, I shouldn't say anybody, but there are often times when beneficiaries take at their own peril that they are going to, if they agree to do so, and they would be liable for return to the estate if, say, a taxing authority intervened and was successful, or, you know, some other unforeseen or foreseeable activity takes place in probate court. So you're not saying that that alone should control?
No. It's a balancing issue.
Okay. And after the Allen versus McBride case, the legislature reacted by clearly stating that the savings statute doesn't apply, correct?
Correct.
Why is this not another activity for the legislature to, if they want to extend the rule that savings statute doesn't apply, why is it not appropriate for them to act just as they did post-Allen?
Two reasons, I think. One, we have this forever barred language, which did not appear in the will contest. The action is to be commenced or forever barred. That suggests that nothing further is needed.
Well, commenced, you know, it is commenced.
Yes.
And that's what the forever barred refers to. It doesn't mean it has to be completed within an X amount of time or forever barred. It just means it has to be started.
Understand. But I would suggest, and again, it may be a matter of interpretation, that because that forever barred language doesn't appear elsewhere, that what's intended here is for this to be short and over. Another reason as well, and that is that the will contest, and I could even argue that the will contest perhaps should have a longer period of time. It's, after all, the starting point for the estate. Is there a will? Is there not a will? Are there two wills? And we have to decide. It's going to determine the entire distributive scheme. Well, if the legislature said that's not going to have the advantage of a saving statute, then certainly a claim shouldn't have it either.
But the legislature promulgated that statute with regards to that specific statute in probate, that specific provision. Why wouldn't we send this back to the legislature and say, here's something else for you to look at?
I suppose, except that I think that the legislature has given a rather clear signal that certainly with respect to will contests, it is not, the savings statute won't apply. And both with respect to this additional forever barred language and with the sort of less organic nature of a claim as compared to the will contest, that it would be clear that they would expect the same to happen here, that there would be no advantage of the savings statute. Again, the purpose of the savings statute is for that litigant who isn't prepared to go to trial for one reason or another. A witness disappears, paperwork is gone. The same situation that litigant would be in at the end of an additional year if those things weren't there, and again, that time would end. But we do have the advantage of, I think, a reasonable bench and diligent attorneys who can fashion their own remedy, knowing that they get one bite at the apple to hear this case.
But in the using of the savings statute, there's no inspection as to the reason why it's employed, and the same could apply here. You can't say, well, you can only take advantage of the savings statute if you have a good reason to.
Understand, it can be done for any reason. All I'm suggesting is that when balanced against the speed that seems to be dictated in the probate process, that should favor over the convenience of a litigant. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time and urge reversal of the decision of the 11th Appellate District.
Thank you, Mr. Wachter. Mr. Zuckel.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is George Zucco and I represent the appellees in this matter. Cutting to the heart of this case, here's the appellants want this court to vacate and set aside the Allen matter, which clearly delineated the reason why the savings statute is applicable. First, the underlying statute here, whether it had words that forever barred or not, it's still a statute of limitations. And if violated, quite frankly, no one can bring suit, whether that language is in there or not. In this case, there is no such language in the claim statute, as there was not in the will contest statute, as there was not in the workers' compensation statute, as there was not in the age discrimination statute, as there was not in the court of claims statute, all of which this court said that since those statutes did not have language that prohibited dismissing and refiling, that the saving statute, which is remedial and should be liberally construed, that's the Cerro case cited on page 3, that means that that saving statute should apply, and it did. Now, the state legislature has opted, because at the beginning of every case, of every probate case, the appointment of an executor to get a case started is extremely important. It doesn't apply in a claims case. The same executor is out there. The estate moves along whether the claim is being litigated or not. There may be other claims which keep an estate open. Federal tax issues, estate tax issues. I'm handling an estate now that's been open for 7 years because the decedent died in Ohio but had been a resident of Texas where he contracted asbestosis. Litigation is going on there. We keep that estate open for other reasons that are valid.
But if you have a claim that you filed and then you've dismissed it, then there is nothing that lets the estate know that you intend to refile it, and they go ahead and they close the estate, they distribute, they pay taxes. Are you maintaining that if you are successful in exerting the 1 year, refiling, and winning, that all has to be undone, or are you just taking your chances? Because that argument was made in McBride. They told us we take our chances. Do you take your chances?
Absolutely.
And what do you do if you win your claim? What is your next step?
If the case is reinstated? Well, what happens, Your Honor, here is we have to get the probate judge to agree to reopen an estate, which he may likely not do. In that case, we're out. We have no other recourse. So yes, the real risk is on us.
You can't go against the beneficiaries and say some of that money should be mine?
No.
You can't go against the taxing authorities and require to give them back?
Absolutely not. There's no claim available.
And so you maintain if you file and they've closed the estate before you've completed, a probate judge can tell you, sorry, too late.
Yes. He has no reason not to. He could reopen the estate, highly unlikely that he would, but the risk is really on the claimant, as it was in this case. We took our chances, and I'll give you the reason why. When we filed this case, we were on a very short track with the trial court, 6 months to trial. We discovered something like 67 boxes of files we had to go through all of the records. There's an uncle and a nephew that went back 25 years. There were records that were unbelievable. We didn't have time to do all of that and get ready for trial. That's why we dismissed the case and continued getting ready for it and refiling it timely. We did what had to be done in this particular matter. I believe that the statute is clear that it allows us to do that. There was no undue delay in this matter. The state legislature did have an opportunity to change this particular statute. It chose not to.
Do I understand your argument then, Mr. Zucco, to be that the distinction between the Allen case in a will contest and the mere filing of a claim in an estate can be done and the saving statute can apply as long as the estate has not been closed?
There's nobody to sue, Your Honor, if the estate is closed.
But once the estate is closed, even though there may be pending litigation on a claim against that estate, if the probate court closes it, there's nothing that can be done with it? Is that your view?
No. If there is pending litigation, you cannot close the estate. If another claimant, I don't know how many other claims are filed in this estate, there may have been others, but if those cases are still going on, and any other litigation, for example, you maybe have a question of determination of heirship, you may have issues involving taxes, all of the things that keep an estate open. I'm saying if that estate is resolved and the final account is filed and there is a discharge of the fiduciary, who am I to serve with the new complaint that I file if it's closed within the year that I would have to refile? I would have to go to the court on bended knee and say, look, please reopen the estate for me because I need to serve a fiduciary. You not only have to reopen the estate, you have to appoint somebody that I can serve with process.
So those persons with claims against estates who file them and dismiss them voluntarily, subject to the saving statute, do so at their peril. But if they can get it filed before the estate's closed, they can hold the estate until the claim is resolved.
The same that applied in Allen. That's exactly what happened there.
All right.
By allowing the refiling under the will contest, one kept the estate open and continued to keep it open until that was finally resolved.
Yes.
The same issue is the same statute here. There's no distinction in the language of the claim statute as there was in the will contest statute or age discrimination, workers' compensation, and Court of Claims. Same language. The ambiguity, the fact that the state legislature did not say what happens after you comply with the original filing, which was timely done, and the case is once dismissed. This case was filed in the General Division. The civil rules apply. 41A allows us to file a 41A dismissal without prejudice and gives us under the savings statute 1 year to refile, which is what we did. And there's no language in the statute of the claims that says otherwise. You would have to go back if you say no today and say Allen is wrong and all the other cases we had are wrong because the language is identical in those statutes. You'd have to undo all of those cases.
I'm going to get this is statutory interpretation, so you all these policy issues are wonderful, but you didn't comment in your brief about how we should apply the or be forever barred language. I think you just touched on it, that if the claimant, if there's a claim filed within the statutory period of time commenced and then dismissed, that the be forever barred language simply doesn't apply because the claimant gets the advantage of the saving statute.
It was timely filed, and I think the language is no more salient or more powerful than any other statute that says if you don't file within 2 years on a personal injury case, that it's forever barred. In this case, we filed it within the time. The language is there, but it doesn't say that, incidentally, if you do dismiss it, you can't refile it again. That language is absent.
That's unusual language for the General Assembly. That's my only problem. There's some reason that use the language, or be forever barred, is strong language. I mean, it's different language than we usually see. It's not statutory. It's not statute of limitations kind of language. So there's some reason that it used that language. But your argument is that as long as the claimant gets in under the two month limitation, they're in.
I think it's a reasonable interpretation, Justice, based on the fact that if you do something that the statute requires you to do, then I think it would take it to the next level, which the state legislature has done in will contest, to say, oh, by the way, if you do voluntarily dismiss the case, then you can't come back and use the saving statute. If that was to be included, they could have included it in the language there. I'm not sure who drafted that, whether someone was sitting there with poetic license, or I don't believe it really has any more effect than the statute itself. Why should it? Because forever barred is the same thing in a statute of limitations. If you blow that, then you can't come back under any circumstances. So it's forever barred. Whether it's in or out, I don't think makes any difference. You have to look at the underlying statute itself, and the purpose is file it then or you're done. Well, I think that's what applied in all statutes of limitations. But this court has ruled that unless there's language that completely says that if you dismiss the case, you can't ever refile it again, then you can refile it. That's what Allen says, and I believe that's what the other cases that the court has cited say as well. I have nothing further. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Zuko. Mr. Wachter, you've saved about almost 2 minutes of your time, not quite.
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to the issue of the statute of limitations, other statute of limitations do not have that forever barred language. For instance, the statute of limitations with respect to personal injury property damage.
Well, counsel, what's the difference whether it's in or not? Wouldn't you agree that if, as opposing counsel stated, if you miss the statute of limitations, you are forever barred from bringing forth the action?
Certainly, but I think it extends even beyond that and says if you miss it, not just the first time, but you're not going to get the advantage of that additional year that the saving statute
Where's that say? Where's that?
It's not there specifically. I don't disagree with that.
That you're forever barred from bringing the action if you miss the two-month mark? Would you agree with that?
Yes.
And in a personal injury situation, if you miss the statute on that, you're forever barred from bringing that action as well.
You are effectively forever barred.
Okay,
that is true.
Okay, so the forever barred refers to the initial act of instigating or initiating the action as opposed to finishing the action or continuing the action.
I suppose it can be read that way, although it seems unusual, as the Chief Justice pointed out, that language would be there where it doesn't appear in other places. It must have some import or wouldn't be included. If I can also briefly respond to the issue with respect to the withholding of assets, 21-1353 provides that if there has been a distribution and there is a valid claim outstanding, the distributees do stand to be personally liable to disgorge that. Whether or not that valid claim exists will hang pending until the, in this case, savings statute has allowed this additional time to run. For these reasons, then, we would urge the court to reverse the ruling of the 11th District.
Thank you, Mr. Wachter. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.
All rise.